Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, conservatives, rejects, and social outcasts everywhere. Welcome back to another episode of the El Paso Conservative. My name is David, your host, and for today's episode, just a mini-series, I guess I started here, of the IndyCar, Car Thoughts, with David. So, as we all know, 2021 has become a very, very, very important wake-up call to not only conservatives hiding in the wings, but to establishment Democrats in just about every sense. I mean, we've known for a long time, at least us conservatives knew, that it was only a matter of time before America would really have to test it, would have its first test of its Biden agenda. We all knew it was going to happen, and Democrats knew too that it was going to happen, just not that it was going to happen so soon. See, I believe that the Democrats' plan for Biden was, well, he inherited a great economy, he inherited a vaccine, he inherited probably the strongest overall the U.S. has been in quite a while. When I say quite a while, I'm referring to the years 2008 to about 2016, or 2015, I should say. So it was quite a flip from the Obama years, what I'm trying to say. And Biden, I guess the plan the Democrats had for Biden was that he had all this greatness. All he would have to do is nothing. Just sit there in the Oval Office and take up space, and he would easily win a second term in the White House. But Biden being Biden, Biden being just a rock with googly eyes in a suit, could not even do that correctly. In his first days in office, he became radical, which we all knew he was going to. It wasn't a surprise to many conservatives that Biden was trying to portray this moderate, but then would be this extreme radical. We all knew that on the right, and I think it was just a denial from the left, because they were trying to push Biden off as this moderate, considerate, you know, Uncle Joe. Which is fine. I mean, they lied a lot about him in the primaries and in the general election, so I don't see why they wouldn't have said that. But Biden fucked up so much in so little time that 2021 has become a testing ground for the Biden agenda. And it seems that everyone was correct when they said that Biden was going to be a very lousy president. Because in the span of 9 months, count them, 9 months, we already have blue states flipping to red. For those of you who aren't in the loop, Virginia elected Virginia is a state Biden won by 10 points in the 2020 election. They now have a new Republican governor. So that tells you all you need to know about how people are reacting to the Biden agenda. And it's not so much the Biden agenda in and of itself, because that is a huge part. But what made the issue here in Virginia was CRT, critical race theory. How the other, how Glenn Youngkin's opponent, Terry McAuliffe, not only did he say that teachers are more in charge of a school, or the school board should be more in charge of a student's education than its parents, but he also believed that the FBI was right in targeting parents as domestic terrorists. Something that was echoed by Biden. Very, very similar to what Terry McAuliffe had said. So we see this, and we see that the normal school parents aren't really okay with their students being taught that white people carry the guilt for things they themselves have not done, and that they are the enemies, and that they are lower than the lowest, and that they're gonna burn for all eternity. Well, no, you get my point. So it turns out parents aren't really a fan of that. Parents also aren't a fan of the Department of Justice labeling them as domestic terrorists and basically sicking the FBI on them. Not a good look for Biden. And the thing here is, not only do we have a complete and utter misunderstanding and total disconnect between the administration and the people of which they are governing, but it also shows just how weaponized the DOJ and the FBI are. Because you remember everyone and the grandmother, when Trump was in office, was saying that Attorney General Bill Barr did the bidding of Trump, and we all know that's not true. But AG Merrick Garland, something like that. He definitely is a political hack, if there was ever such a thing. If you look up political hack in the dictionary, I think you might see a picture of him next to Biden. And he did. He investigated him with no evidence other than the letter presented to him by the National School Boards Association, stating that there could be, not that there are, but there could be. So remind yourself that when Biden says, "Oh, I would never use the full force of the government on you," of course he did. He's already using the full force of the government to cram through his unpopular agendas. He's already using the fist of government to interfere with your day-to-day lives. And I think more people are going to wake up and realize, you know what? Having a big government sucks. But they realize that too late. And the issue here, well, not the issue here, but moving forward, the best strategy for Republican candidates going into 2022, and more broadly, I suppose, towards the general election, is that we need to take a stance in the culture. Because for many years, the culture of the United States was very conservative. It wasn't up until conservatives abandoned the culture in 1950 did we get things that we still deal with to this day. Like, we still deal with consequences of the sexual revolution, and we still deal with consequences of all these, you know, nonsense things that happened in the 60s, 70s, 80s. You know, we have abandoned the culture because we believe that it wasn't going to matter in the long run. And when you abandon the culture to an enemy that hates you, they're going to breed a culture that hates you too. I mean, there are some people who hate conservatives just for the mere fact that they think a certain way. And that is because of the left indoctrination of a culture that is bred to hate you. Now, I won't give any historical comparisons here because, it's unwarranted and unnecessary. But you can see the implications of this, and it's pretty easy to see just how far we have let them win. And it's something that we as a party, or more us as people more specifically, we really need to start taking back the culture. Because, I mean, then and only then will we truly have an even playing field when it comes to elections. Because if you think about it, all the media companies, all the news companies, all Hollywood are blue and will promote propaganda for the sole fact that you think a certain way. You will be discriminated because you think a certain way, and you will be ousted from society from a certain way. And what they don't understand is that is exactly how you get more Trump. If people wanted him out before, this is just going to be another reason why most of America is going to give the Democrats, and Biden specifically, a giant orange middle finger in the shape of Donald Trump. That's it, because you push more and more people away with your, I guess, more authoritarian ways and more nonsense policies that sees you destroy their lives while you're living very comfortably. Yeah, you're going to get a giant middle finger in the form of Donald Trump. It's not so much because people like him, but it's because under him, things were so much better. And he's the one that's going to say things that no one else is going to say. Again, this is why he was elected in 2016. So I don't understand the strategy for Democrats to poke the bear even more. I mean, perhaps they do want Trump to run so they can unify their base. However, I don't think that the base for the Democrats is going to be enough to not only defeat the Republicans who have been energized because of Biden's poor performance during the last 9 months, but I don't think that coalition would beat the people who are going to vote for Trump, who are independent, who are leaning towards the liberal direction. Why? Because their lives are being directly affected, and the only people who like Biden are the progressives and the leftists. And you can't hold a coalition like that. I mean, especially now you see with the Build Back Better agenda, you see there's a fragment in the party. Biden wants to pass the infrastructure bill, and I think it's the House progressives say, no, we're not going to vote for that unless, you know, we vote for Build Back Better. And there's this whole issue going on in the House and in the Senate about passing bills. And if the Republicans get control of the Senate in 22, Biden's not doing anything. I mean, as it is, he hasn't done anything but killed like 4 people and droned an innocent family. But it's not going to happen. I don't see how Biden could pull a win. I mean, I could, but we're not talking about that right now. I mean, if you really think about it, Biden has done nothing but screw the economy, screw the pooch on jobs, screw the pooch on gas, screw the pooch on education, and everything. And it's just going to be interesting. And I guess it's kind of hard to imagine now, but it'll also be interesting to see how exactly that pans out on the federal level. Is Biden going to pull down other senators, other representatives who are seeking re-election? Is this the end of the Biden presidency? And that's a good question. And it'd be very, very interesting to see. More specifically, back on the home front, back in the nice sandy desert that is El Paso, it'd be very interesting to see how Biden's influence is going to affect the District 16 race here in El Paso. For those of you who are unaware, for those of you who are listening to this and are wondering, where the hell's El Paso? Or what is District 16? So District 16 is a House district in the House of Representatives for Texas. And that covers basically most of El Paso. I think of it that it's more downtown El Paso. Because the more you get towards the more rural areas, it becomes Texas District 16. But the incumbent, Veronica Escobar, she is a progressive to the fullest. She is a hammer and sickle wearing communist. At least that's how she portrays herself. And I'm almost curious to see what the polling data would be for Veronica's chances of re-election. And we're going to go ahead and get to that in the next segment. So the question that I asked in the previous segment was, will Biden's sinking approval ratings bring down other Democrat hopefuls seeking re-election? Well, that's kind of hard to tell at the moment. Maybe once we get to 2022, when we get these midterm races, well, I guess we'll find out for sure. However, there's a lot of evidence that may suggest that it does. I mean, if you look at what happened in Virginia with Terry McAuliffe getting just absolutely fucking swamped against Glenn Youngkin. Oh, we can say that was primarily a reason because of the Biden agenda. So, are we to say that Biden's sinking numbers will reflect on other congressmen and women seeking re-election? I mean, it just might. Locally here, there is another challenger for the seat here at District 16, which is currently occupied by Veronica Escobar. Her name is Irene Jackson, who challenged, I believe, in 2020 as well, and lost to what I can only say was a landslide. I think it was... I think Escobar got 155,000 votes to Ms. Jackson's 33,000 votes. Now, will that change when El Pasoans go to the polls unhappy with the rising gas prices, rising cost of their property taxes here on a local level? Will we finally see Republicans begin to come out of the woodwork and try to steer probably one of the bluest cities? Okay, never mind. Austin is the bluest city in Texas, but one of the bluest cities in Texas back to a more conservative direction. Well, that's kind of remains to be seen. We haven't really had in recent memory, according to me, we haven't had a strong Republican strong Republican mayor, at all, which is kind of indicative of the place that we live now, or at least in the place that we happen to occupy. You know, it's so blue that even Republicans have to appear moderate in order to actually get people to listen to their policies. Because it's not just about running against Democrats. No, the golden rule in elections is you want to make it really hard to vote for your opponent and really easy to vote for you. And when people have preconceived notions about you because of your political affiliation, that kind of becomes an impossibility when we talk about the public being almost opinionated on everything and not willing to hear out your policies. So, will Ms. Jackson now have a leg up in the polls in the race? Well, that's kind of hard to tell. I mean, conventional wisdom would say, of course, because the president is really unpopular. He's about at a 37% approval rating. I believe that's the worst for any president in American history. So, will that have an impact? I think so. Okay, let me rephrase that. Most definitely, it will. But to what extent, the extent of its impact is unknown. However, Ms. Escobar also has a very, very, very bad voting record. And people have described her as being very unlikable. She's like a Latina Kamala Harris. Just very, very unlikable. So we'll see how that works. Will this be something that is strictly a party vote? Probably. I don't suspect it to be anything more than that. I mean, people will vote for her just so we don't have a Republican in office because, again, preconceived notions. But this goes back to the whole us abandoning the culture. So, I think, and don't let me tell you how to run your campaign, Ms. Jackson, but I believe that if you're going to make this work, if you want to give Ms. Escobar a real run for her money, you need to drive your campaign more towards the culture, more towards how she has abandoned El Paso and the values of her constituents, and began to become a proxy member of the squad. Not really a member of the squad, not progressive enough to be called a member of the squad, but totally still kind of hanging on their coattails when it comes to her decision making. I think if you can paint her in that light, then I think you have a chance. I think most Republicans in El Paso will definitely vote for anybody else but a Democrat. The issue here is getting Democrats or independents to vote for you. So I think if you make it about culture, if you make it about gas prices, if you make it about Veronica's constant inability to do right by the people and instead doing right by her, I think you have a formula that will take you a bit further than you would than you went last time. I'm not going to say that it's going to take you into office. But if we're seeing what happened with Youngkin, you know, it just might. If you make this solely based on her, if it's a referendum on her and the Biden agenda, then you can go places. Not necessarily to Washington, D.C., but places. And I think that's exactly what we need to start doing going forward. I mean, it is 2021. We're about to enter 2022. Midterm season. It's going to be all over the place. So that's probably something that we need to start looking at going forward in order to more properly assess the situation and assess our goals. Because as a party, we kind of have to realign who we are. You know, we are the party of marginal tax rates and all that jazz. But at the same time, we've also become, in the span of from 2016 to 2020 and now 2020 to 2024, we have become the party for the working class. I mean, more blue-collar people share the values of the Republican Party without actually knowing those are the values of the Republican Party. And I've said this about a lot of Hispanics here on Paso too. A lot of Hispanics have conservative values and conservative tendencies. They just don't know that that is what conservatism is, because the Republican Party has been presented in such a way to them by the Democrats and the Democratic Party that, you know, they believe that they just they're Democrats. You know, and that's something that we perhaps need to work on. We need to work on our image. Not so much in the fact that we're the ones in the wrong, but we have to have an image that is iron solid to withstand media scrutiny. Because the media is the media, and the media will find any and all excuse to come after you, to come after the party. So I think we really need to evaluate how we want to present ourselves to those who share our values but are, I guess, hesitant or don't know that those are conservative values. I can tell you right now, a bunch of working people are seeing their paychecks disappear, and a lot of students are seeing their paychecks disappear because of just the amount of things that, unfortunately, the Build Back Better plan relies on. It relies on taxes from the middle class to fund. And if we make this election cycle, if we make the midterms 2022 and 2024 a referendum on Biden's agenda and Biden himself, then we are most likely going to be stumbling upon a winning formula here. Now, if the Democrats try to make this about defending Biden's agenda and they start to double down, then we certainly have a winning formula in that. However, how we go about that is it's very, very different, but it'd be very much interesting to see how 2022 begins to shape the almost return of the Republican Party. And hopefully, it's a year where we learned our lesson and we'll continue to move forward. We put the pedal to the metal and we begin to see that, yeah, the culture matters. And I would very much like to pose an open invitation to Ms. Jackson and Ms. Escobar to sit down and talk with me on the show. And, you know, just to see how running, or I guess the party going into government is going to be slightly different than the party outside of the government. And, you know, just to pick their brains and see where they are. Now, I'm pretty sure Ms. Escobar is never going to accept the invitation, nor is she ever going to hear this. But, you know, the option's there. I will get Ms. Jackson on the show, and we'll have a conversation about are conservative values. Because if you have spent any time listening to this show, you know that I'm not the typical conservative. So I would be curious to see how that would work, and just the conversation that it's that would ensue. I haven't had a conversation with another conservative in a while, so it'd be very much refreshing to converse with someone who we have the same framework, but we have different. We have the same blueprints, but not the same building. If that makes any sense, or I guess the not the same design building, because the foundation's the same, but the architectural interior design, whatever, is different. You get my metaphor. So that'd be very, very interesting to see. In the next segment, in our very concluding segment, we're going to go ahead and talk about the state of the nation as it is through the lens of someone who is watching everything burn. I'm practically Nero here. We're practically like the citizens of Rome when Rome lit on fire and Joe Biden's... Now, I know that's a myth, and I'm pretty sure that didn't happen. But that's the thing that a lot of people say. That Nero played, I think it was, he was playing some instrument when half of Rome was on fire. And I'm pretty sure that that's an ancient myth. But in the next segment, we're going to talk about the continuing de-evolution of the American cultural system and just how we let it get here. The de-evolution of American society begins and ends with a willingness to deconstruct. Now, what does that mean? Well, it means that we are willing to tear apart the fabric and institutions that we have place in our culture for no good reason. And that's practically been the pitch that the leftists have been making, that because everything is racist, everything has to go. Now, you and I, and everyone listening to this, know that that's not an excuse, because someone can decry racism at everything, and that automatically becomes the de facto answer as to why should we do it? Why should this be here? Why should this not be here? We've all been to the same song and dance. We've all been to the same rodeo. We know how it works. But willingness must come from the American public. Now, if leftist politicians said this in Washington and all of us senseless people ignored them, well, they wouldn't be doing a lot of damage to the fabric of America. But because leftists are so, I wouldn't necessarily say widespread, but more potent in certain areas, and you can kind of pinpoint it down, the bluest parts of the country are where they're at, that's when things become almost, that's when things that would never be accepted are truly accepted. And we saw that with the burning of Minneapolis, we saw that in the burning of Portland, and we see that in cities across America that were literally destroyed from the ground up. And we see these in institutions, once great institutions in which we had great faith in, now beginning to play what is commonly referred to as a game of race, where the only card in the deck is the race card. And our politics have now devolved into no longer discussions of what policy is better or what fits with the American culture. Our politics has now devolved into identity politics, which is probably the lowest form of politics that you could go in, because you can't objectively say anything. That's all subjective. And when you have people making decisions, objective decisions about a country using a subjective lens, well, let me stop right there for a second. Well, you may be saying, well, David, isn't ideology subjective lenses? And I would say no, because ideology comes from the real world. You see things in your life, or you were given values as a child, and you've worked your entire life to determine your own values. That isn't so much a lens, but that is how you have grown as an adult. I can tell you right now that the values that I held as a high school student are not the same values that I hold now as a college student in his senior year of college. It's ideology is more of an evolution of the psyche, whereas ideology is an evolution of the psyche, whereas identity politics is solely subjective. It solely goes with what is common in politics, or what is a common talking point. And simply saying, oh, well, because I'm this, this is how it should be done. And then you decry people who say no and give you objective reasons for it simply because you find it racist, which is, again, subjective. And when you have senators who have a lot of control over what happens in your life, making subjective decisions on objective matters, yeah, you get a lot of things that don't make sense. And that is how we as a culture have devolved, because we began to see subjective arguments more clearly than we did objective arguments over the same issue. Now, I've talked to this with a bunch of my friends, and especially to my girlfriend, who is the left would consider her my oppressor. Well, she's white. And we talk about this all the time, because it's very interesting to get a cultural perspective on this, because, you know, not everyone sees things differently. That could be because of culture, and we have a lot of cultural misunderstandings, a lot. But that's no fault of her own, and that's no fault of my own. That's just how we were raised, and culture is what it is. So it becomes kind of a culture shock when she does things that I'm like, wow, you do that? But, you know, I talk with her all the time, and she's even like, yeah, that's ridiculous. You know, how would you feel being told that you're evil and that you're to blame for everything? And I keep telling her, well, I'm conservative. Well, they blame me anyways. So it's kind of crazy to think how we literally, like, 8 years ago, were making objective arguments on Obamacare. And even then, that was more subjective. Oh, but you don't agree with Obama, you're racist. That was the line of thinking. And I guess you could pinpoint it there, but I'm almost certain you can go back to history and find the exact moment where that became a thing, which I won't do for the sake of argument, although I can if we really need to dive into the subject again. But like I said, when you breed a psychology, when you breed a philosophy that is completely subjective, you can move the goalposts wherever you'd like, and that still be considered your ideological standard. Now, the great thing about leftism for leftists is that they don't have any concrete morals or values in their ideology. So whatever they say goes. We as conservatives have we do have morals and we do have values that we ascribe to. And when we make our decisions in life, we weigh them against our morals and values. And that is how we make decisions. That is how we make objective decisions, using our values. Now, everyone will say that, and I've heard this argument before, and it was stupid then, it's stupid now. Most of us conservatives get our morals and values from our families. A large percent of our conservatives get their morals and values from religion. Now, I'm not one to knock religion. You believe in what you want to believe in. Just because I don't doesn't mean that you shouldn't. You know, if that's the kind of thing that you want to do and it has a very positive influence in your life, by all means, who am I to stop you? And I have this argument, not an argument, but we talk about this all the time, me and my girlfriend, because she's really into, like, crystals and everything. And I mock her and tell her, oh, well, it's not real, you know, but at the end of the day, it's something that she really enjoys. And I tell her, well, I tell the same thing. I'm like, well, you know, I personally don't believe in it, but if it makes you feel good, you know, then you do you. I'm not going to tell you what to do. But
a lot of these people, back to our talking point here, don't believe, they believe in the separation of church and state, which they believe means that religion should have no place in a representative, congressman's, or bureaucrat's decision-making. Which is a butchering of the term, because, okay, first of all, separation of church and state, as we know it, came from a letter from Thomas Jefferson, but that phrase in and of itself isn't in the Constitution. What they're referring to is the First Amendment's right that separates church and state. Now, what you may be thinking, well, what is that? Well, the First Amendment says that Congress shall make no law that any religion is banned, nor is there going to be a state religion. So that right there is what separation of church and state means. It doesn't mean that, you know, because you hold some religious beliefs, you can't make decisions based on those morals that you learn from them. That's absurd. And we continue to make decisions like leftists. We react because we feel, we don't think about things, and things become very, very chaotic. I had a friend who was like that and would never stop to think about her actions and would always say things when she felt them and felt that those were the right things to do. Now, granted, being we're not friends anymore, and I'm not one to speak ill of people who can't defend themselves, but she's never going to talk to me again. So, in the vein of I don't care, we're going to do it anyways. She was one of those people who was very nice, very cool, but the moment that she began to feel things that were going wrong, she would immediately disassociate from you, wouldn't tell you anything, and then would just blow up at you for no particular reason than that. I mean, she even blamed me for the guilt that she felt calling CPS on her mother, even though that was the right thing to do, and she made the decision. I just helped her saying, hey, it's okay, whatever you're gonna do, I support you. But no, of course, I'm the villain. And that is how we make our decision making. We make our decisions exactly like my friend over there. Very childish way of thinking. I've told her that many times, and we've told these people many times, but is that gonna change? Absolutely not, unless we take a hold of the culture. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for sitting through another episode, or our first episode of our car talks here at the El Paso Conservative. I hope you enjoyed. The show. If you enjoyed, go ahead and follow me on Instagram at the El Paso Conservative. If you like the show, why not like it? Give us a 5-star review, and tell your friends about us. Hey, if you even enjoy the content so much, why not think about supporting the podcast? In times like these, it's strange, and your guys' support is what allows me to continue to sit in my car or sit in my office and scream in a microphone or into my phone in this case about our culture. If you guys would like to submit your questions, go ahead and go to the website. It's in the link in my Spotify. The link in my Spotify description. Go ahead and click there. Go ahead and send me an email, and I'll go ahead and answer all your questions live on the air, or you can get at me on Twitter use the hashtag AskTheEPCon, and we'll go from there. Anyways, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for taking the time to listen to me. My name is David, the El Paso Conservative, and I will see you guys later.